So thank you again for this invitation. It's really great to be here. And my drive yesterday from UCLA was a nice reminder that when you choose the right time, we're not that far away from this wonderful scientific community, which opens many, many possibilities for not only being here today, but for future interactions and collaborations. So I hope to be contributing to this today's cancer session is to some of our efforts to try to attack some of the very old problems in the field of treating cancer, and specifically treating leukemia by cell-based therapies, how to generate more hematopoietic stem cells for patients that are in need. So hematopoietic stem cell is the classical stem cell that has been has provided the greatest therapeutic benefit so far. However, there's not enough matching hematopoietic stem cells for every patient that could benefit from this therapy. And therefore, many patients, they have to use a non-perfect match or suboptimal dose of hematopoietic stem cells, and this is why their treatment is severely compromised. And the problem that has been in the field for a long time, that it really hasn't been possible to expand self-renewing hematopoietic stem cells in culture. For some reason, we put them to culture, we stimulate them, and we lose their unique properties. And so the new possibility, how could we generate more hematopoietic stem cells, would be to use pluripotent cells and generate de novo hematopoietic stem cells in vitro. However, the results so far have been very, very, if not impossible, but at least giving some indication that this is going to be a serious challenge. It's possible to make blood cells, but it hasn't been possible to make real self-renewing hematopoietic stem cells that could be sustain long-term self-renewing in patients and actually cure a patient. So, and why is it so difficult? In order to maintain the unique properties of hematopoietic stem cell, which are the self-renewal ability, multipotentiality, and the ability to engraft and interact with a niche, this is a property that has to be very tightly regulated. If it wouldn't be, we all would have leukemia, because if self-renewal would be easy, we would all have stem cells coming from our ears. So it is a protection mechanism for us to protect us from leukemia. But this is why when we take the stem cells from their perfect microenvironment, the niche, they stop self-renewing and start differentiating or die. So how could we make this happen? So in the bone marrow, we have this perfect balance. So what if we would like to get there from zero, starting from the pluripotent cell? This is an even more complicated path, because stem cells are not just generated, hematopoietic stem cells are not just generated like that. It's a very complicated process that occurs during embryogenesis, where these cells undergo different stages of development, where they're exposed to many different microenvironments that all give the signals that nurture this cell towards its future goal and protect it from premature differentiation. So now what we're trying to do in our lab is learn how would the embryo do this? How would the embryo make the functional hematopoietic stem cell, because this is where really the expert is. The embryo was doing these things far before we were even thinking about stem cell biology. So the big questions that we're trying to answer, first of all, if we want to study a cell, you need to find it. And this, the origin of hematopoietic stem cells has been a long-lasting controversy in the field. Once we find the cell, we can try to understand what is the microenvironmental niche that supports this cell, and what are the specific molecular cues that protect this cell during its development and maintenance. And when we learn something, we can try to think about what can we bring now into the culture dish in order to improve the microenvironment for hematopoietic stem cell self-renewal or to generate these de novo from pluripotent sources, such as human embryonic stem cells or IP cells, that would provide a truly autologous source for hematopoietic stem cells. And in today's world, we're still failing. And I think with any failure, it's key to understand what went wrong. Then you can try to change it. And we know that ultimately the developmental potency of the cell is captured in the cell intrinsic machinery that somehow encodes what this cell is capable of doing in the future. So we're trying to understand what are the cell intrinsic mechanisms that govern multipotentiality and self-renewal ability in the hematopoietic stem cell. So if we go back to the very, very origin of the hematopoietic stem cell. For a long time, it has been thought that the aorta-gonad mesonephrous region, which is the dorsal aorta and the adjacent large vessels, the vitelline and umbilical arteries, would be the sole source of hematopoietic stem cells in the embryo. But this is how few hematopoietic stem cells we have in the AGM. Total of 3 transplantable hematopoietic stem cells. So the question was, is it really this very rare source of stem cells? Could this supply this large stockpile of stem cells that we suddenly see in the fetal liver a few days later? So when I was a postdoc in Stuart Organ's lab in Boston, we did some studies together with Françoise Dieterlen in France and found that there's another hematopoietic site, the placenta, that seems to be somehow contributing to this process of generating the pool of hematopoietic stem cells. And what we found that there is this large pool of stem cells in the mouse placenta during mid-gestation. But we didn't know whether they're actually generated there or whether they simply go there from other sites for expansion. So in our more recent studies, we have shown by using this mouse model, RUNX1 LAXV mouse model, we have found 2 distinct areas in the placenta where we propose that in these large vessels of the placenta here in the chorionic plate, that this is where hematopoietic stem cells would be emerging in the very same way as they're emerging in the dorsal aorta. And subsequently, once emerged, these readily made hematopoietic stem cells might circulate through this placental labyrinth, which is this tight vascular network, which also is participating in the fetal-maternal gas exchange. And this is where we see, actually, hematopoietic stem cells and progenitors dividing, suggesting that this microenvironment may provide some signals for hematopoietic expansion. And but the question is, hematopoiesis really originating de novo in the placenta? It was very difficult to address because hematopoietic stem cells are in circulation. Hematopoietic stem and progenitors start to circulate very early, and then you can't trace its origin anymore. So we got very lucky. We were able to use this mouse model that lacks heartbeat, NCX1 a knockout mouse, and this is why all the blood cells that are generated remain at their site of origin. So to summarize these studies, we could show that in the same way as in the wild-type placenta, we can see these CD41-positive nascent hematopoietic stem and progenitor cells emerging in these large vessels of the placenta. Also in the NCX knockout, we can see these CD41-positive hematopoietic cells that are emerging in the placental vasculature. And when there's no flow, we can see that they even stagger on top of each other because they're not taken to the next site of origin. And we have shown by culture studies that these cells are capable of making myeloid, erythroid, and BNT lymphoid cells, fulfilling the criteria of multipotentiality for the hematopoietic stem cell. And however, we did observe something interesting that I won't go in further details today, but we did observe that this process of hematopoietic stem cell emergence from the endothelium seems to be delayed or impaired when we don't have heartbeat, suggesting that there may be some, because we get these cellular aggregates of these cells that have a phenotype that is in between endothelium and a hematopoietic cell. So this gives us some cues for future studies to try to understand what regulates hematopoietic stem cell emergence from the hemogenic endothelium and what are the signals that might be conveyed by shear forces and blood flow. So this is where our future studies are, looking at these early signals of hematopoietic stem cell emergence, as well as trying to understand what is so unique about this placental labyrinth that provides this microenvironment that allows expansion of hematopoietic stem and progenitor cells. But I won't be going into details into these studies because these studies are still ongoing. What I will be talking more about today is another microenvironmental component that we believe is important at all stages of hematopoietic stem cell development. And this is signals that come from the supportive stroma. And there are stroma cells in all these different hematopoietic sites. There are stroma cells. And they're sort of this junk box of cells that nobody knows really what they are and how do they look like and what they do. But they seem to be contributing to something because still the best culture condition so far to culture hematopoietic cells is to use stroma cells. But in today's world, the available lines that are being used are mouse stroma, and they could never be used in clinical settings because contamination by animal proteins. So we said to us, like, if we know these anatomical sites where hematopoietic stem cells develop, can we derive stroma lines that would help hematopoietic stem cell development? So first, now that we have found placenta, we're very excited about this, but we needed to define whether the placenta is also a hematopoietic site in human. And we know that all the other hematopoietic sites are very much conserved. And I won't go to these studies today, but what we have shown that the human placenta, which looks very different than the mouse placenta macroscopically, but has very much the same cellular components when you look inside, it also is an active site of hematopoiesis early during first trimester of human development. So now we asked, if we take derived stroma lines from these early human hematopoietic sites, the placenta, and the fetal liver that subsequently supports hematopoietic stem cell expansion, can we recreate conditions that would support hematopoietic stem cells in vitro? So we generated these multiple stroma lines, even close to 100 of stroma lines that we have, and we plated CD34 hematopoietic stem and progenitor cells from fetal liver and put them in culture with the best hematopoietic stem cell cocktail that we know. If we culture with no stroma, we lose this immature population. If we culture with mouse OP9 stroma, we can maintain this population. Most of the stroma lines that we derived, clearly they promoted proliferation, but all the cells differentiated. Whereas we were able to identify a few stroma lines where we could maintain this population, this immature CD34 positive, CD38 negative population. And if we looked at these non-supportive lines, what happened, all these cells went towards myeloid differentiation. Whereas in the supportive stroma lines, not only were we able to preserve this immature population, but we could see differentiation into myeloid, erythroid, and B-lymphoid lineages. So we could see that this stroma supports, it really allows establishment of a multi-lineage human hematopoiesis in culture. And what was very exciting to see that when we kept replating these cells, as long as they kept growing, we could see that we could maintain this population over close to 2 months in culture. And the total fold expansion was close to 100,000 fold. And even if we look at this most immature CD90 positive population, we get close to 100,000 fold expansion. And when we isolate single cells halfway through this expansion process, and plate them, further expand them, and put them in the differentiation assays, we could say that at single cell level, these cells with the CD34, 38 negative and CD90 positive phenotype retain their multipotentiality in culture on this supportive stroma. And so this was very exciting and encouraging for us, but we needed to know whether the cell retained any functionality in an in vivo setting. So we took these cells that were expanded over 7 or 14 days during the in vitro culture and transplanted them into the NOG, immunodeficient NOG mouse model. And this is our preliminary data. It was very exciting to see that we do get engraftment after at least this 1 or 2 weeks expansion. We can see robust engraftment of human CD45 positive cells. And it looks like we even get some expansion during this prolonged culture. When we looked at the lineage differentiation potential, we could see that these cells can robustly generate T cells, B cells, and also some human myeloid cells in the recipient animals, suggesting that they can at least retain multipotentiality in an in vivo setting during this in vitro culture. And so this is when we have an already made hematopoietic stem cell. How about if we start from the very beginning, from an embryonic stem cell? Does the same line provide the cues to specify the hematopoietic cell de novo? So we took the same stroma lines, we plated H1 human ESLs without any added cytokines, and excitingly we could see that after 13 days we could see the generation of the CD34, 31 positive hematoendothelial precursor cells. And when we replated them on the stroma, we could make a robust population of 34 positive, 45 positive true hematopoietic progenitor cells that were able to generate at least multi-potential myeloerythroid colonies in culture. And these studies are still in the very beginning, so we still need to see whether these cells have any lymphoid potential. It has been a big challenge of generating anything that has lymphoid potential from human ES cells. But we hope that, because we know that these stromal lines can support human B lymphopoiesis, in contrast to the OP9 that wasn't providing this ability, maybe we would be able to generate even B cells through these cultures. And of course, the big question that still we need to address whether we can generate hematopoietic cells that possess any self-renal ability in vivo. So I don't think we have all the answers yet, but at least it's clear that these cell lines are, this stroma cell is doing something interesting for the cells. So what is the property that these cells have? First, we I want to ask, is it due to secreted molecules or surface-bound molecules? So we did an experiment where we compared, we took just supernatant from these supportive and non-supportive lines and put it, add it onto the CD34 positive cells. And we could see, we compared to the non-supportive lines, when we just have the supernatant from this line, the profiles look very different. So the differentiation signals seem to come from the supernatant, from secreted ligands. And whereas we looked at the supportive line, we could see that we could get transient protection of the progenitor population when we took the supernatant. But we lost this much faster than if we had the cell surface contact there as well. Very excitingly, when we combined the non-supportive and supportive lines, we could see that this supportive effect was dominant, because now we could see a prolonged preservation of these immature, undifferentiated populations. So these supportive signals were overriding the differentiating signals that was coming from these non-supportive lines. So it's something that is actively protecting the hematopoietic stem cell from premature differentiation. And when we did microarray analysis, and here we're looking at a heat map where we're combining both the secreted and surface-bound molecules from these lines, and we're comparing two of the non-supportive and three of the supportive lines, we could see that, first of all these cells that fall, all these stroma lines that fall in the same functional criteria are almost identical and very different from the other type of stroma, suggesting that we truly have isolated two different type of niche cells from these hematopoietic sites. And we can isolate both type of cells from both placenta and fetal liver. And if we look, what are these cells? The non-supportive lines, they express characteristic markers of mesenchymal stem cells and secrete some hematopoietic growth factors that is easy to understand why they promote differentiation. And so this seems to be a classical mesenchymal cell. The supportive lines, we don't have any idea what they are. They don't express mesenchymal markers. But interestingly, they do express many of the sort of known ligands and growth factors that we know that support hematopoiesis. And obviously, we don't know exactly how they function. So we're trying to, in our current studies, we're combining the microarray analysis from these stroma lines and combining it with the microRNA analysis of the hematopoietic stem cell that has been cultured in this microenvironment to try to identify sort of ligand receptor pairs that are on the niche side, and then the downstream effectors are active in the hematopoietic stem cell. And we have started to identify interesting candidate pathways that seem to be sustained by this stroma in the hematopoietic stem cell during the culture. We're combining this with proteomic approach, because not everything that is there at the RNA level is really there at the protein level, to truly identify what is the secretome and the surfeome, as perfectly fits for the Southern California style, what these cells have in their surface that support these hematopoietic stem and progenitor cells. And we hope to be, now that we have this in vitro system where we can manipulate both the niche side or the hematopoietic stem cell side, we can hopefully that this provides a true in vitro system where we can mechanistically try to address the different components of the hematopoietic stem cell niche interactions that protect the hematopoietic stem cell. And are there any potential clinical applications from these studies? So at least what is different to many prior studies is that now we have a human stroma. So these could potentially be even used for expanding human hematopoietic stem cells. And we know now that we can reproducibly isolate this type of stroma, and we could do this in GMB grade conditions. Of course, optimally, we would like to have a cell-free system, and maybe we can isolate a critical extracellular matrix components that provide these adhesive contacts that the cell needs and take just the supernatant from these cells for cell-free culture system. Or maybe we are able to identify key components that these cell lines are secreting so that we could ultimately recreate the most important components of the NIS by isolating novel surface-bound and secreted molecules that support hematopoietic stem cells. So we think that there's a lot of exciting potential that we can learn from these cells and what we might be able to use for future clinical applications. However, we don't think that things are trivial. Clearly, when cells are exposed to culture, they're exposed to wear and tear. And we don't know how long we really can maintain the hematopoietic stem cell, the truly functional hematopoietic stem cell in culture. It looks the same. It seems to be still multipotential. It can retain some in vivo engraftment ability. But there's clearly going to be changes. And this is what we're trying to understand. What are the changes that occur during the culture that are critical for long-term cell renewability? We would also like to understand what happens to these human ears or IPS-derived progenitors that seem to be the initiation to the hematopoietic program seems to go just fine, but then they fall off the track. They never learn really how to self-renew. They never really learn how to engraft long-term in the hematopoietic niches. Do they look like the hematopoietic stem cells that have been cultured for too long, or do they look like the more immature hematopoietic stem cell that is still developing in the embryo? And maybe by understanding how these cells differ by their cell intrinsic regulatory mechanisms, we can try to understand how far are we in generating truly functional hematopoietic stem cell from pluripotent cells. And so finally, I would like to introduce our lab members who have done all the work and our collaborators near and far who have made this work possible. And obviously, without funding, we wouldn't be doing anything. And especially California Institute of Regenerative Medicine has been a huge supporter of our work, and we're truly grateful for this support. Thank you very much for your attention.